Jesus Christ, he's got a knife!
It's what? Super got a knife. Fucking brutal. Guys.
We don't need no masthead, we don't need no rules, cause we just talk and bounce boys like a bunch of crazy ass fools.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Masthead Free Podcast. As you can tell by the sound of my voice, we're not exactly thrilled to be here because of some unforeseen events. But before we get into that, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Tottenham Makes Me Cry, from College Free Captain, Oxford, England. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just... Sorry, it's been a really difficult weekend, because... I can't do this right now.
Well, I don't have time for this either. This is Bricks, you know. Whatever, just fuck it.
Hey, everybody, it's Fifth Run over here. I'm doing lovely. Everything is great.
Well, since you're the most happiest, cheerful person here, why don't you just go ahead and talk about it?
All right, everybody. Well, the thing is, this weekend sucked, plain and simple. And already by Saturday, I got an email from A1 saying, fuck all, I don't want to talk about that Chelsea match. And then as we talked about it, we basically were all in agreement, and we don't want to talk about it. You know, it's being talked about ad nauseum by everybody. What went wrong, what went right? So we're going in a different direction, not only just with this segment, but with the pod in general this week. We're going to try to show you why it's still fun to be a Spurs supporter. And I think it's important that we remember how fun it is to be a Spurs supporter and how much fun football can be, because once that comes out of the game, what do you have? You know, you have a bunch of rich men playing with, you know, these clubs that we love, you know, a bunch of rich players doing their thing out there, but they come and go, you know? So I think having fun is very important. And one of the reasons I think it's important is because, you know, there was a couple of years ago, I was sitting in the pub with my friend Ben, and we were watching the United match that was on before the Spurs match. So we were sitting there, we got there early, and it was the end of the match. And these United fans are sitting, you know, jumping around, screaming every time the ball got in the final third. Oh, I can't believe, oh God, I can't believe he didn't score. You know, and they're just going nuts. And I looked at Ben and I said, man, this is such a fundamentally different experience than we have watching, you know, football. You know, they wouldn't even like this game if they, like, rooted for Spurs, man. And it brought me back, you know, because we're used to the disappointment. And it brought me back to this conversation I had with this guy who's actually from North London, and he lived in Milwaukee. And this dude, you know, he wasn't necessarily really warm to us right away. You know, he's kind of leery, like, you know, these guys really like Spurs. Are they, you know, real fans? But over time, he loosened up, and I remember him saying one time that basically he said, fuck all the glory hunters, you know, we know what it is to lose, and we know how to lose. And I never forgot that. Knowing how to lose, knowing how to, you know, just throw everybody under the bus, knowing how to, like, pick your head up and put your shirt on the next day, put on your badges, put on your scarf and say, fuck it, I'm Tottenham. You know, we lose, but this is still my club. And I think that when we focus just on the results, that weekend, it takes away from some of the fun. You know, I have a lot of personal stories with Spurs that if I just focus on that one result over the weekend, I can't enjoy them. And they're clear-cut memories in my mind, like the time where I was watching the Arsenal derby where Rafa was doing the shush in the Gooners, you know, pipe down Gooners, things like that. At the end of that match, somebody, you know, spilled a beer on me, and I made that Gooner wash my shirt. And that's one of my proudest memories, that fucker had to wash my Spurs shirt. You know, this is a different time and place. I would have kicked his ass. I was pissed, man. But it was like it's such a fun thing for me to remember that if I was just like wallowing in tactics right now, I couldn't smile. And I'm fucking laughing at that right now. Or the time where I was doing the full Pete Townsend, you know, air guitar after Nico Kranjčar scored in stoppage time against Bolton in a typical Spurs match, man. A typical Spurs match. We dominated their ass. I think Daniel Sturridge, you know, if you remember that, he was on loan at Bolton, scored an equalizer. And I was just sitting there going, fuck all. We fucked it up against Bolton, and then Nico hit that thing, and I remember just jumping out of my chair, and Ben's looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But then last year, I remember when Dempsey scored against Man United in that snow game at the Lane, Ben jumped out of that chair. He was up jumping around, and I was basically spent, and I was sitting there on the couch looking, and I said, look at this shit. Look at how the roles are reversed. I started following Spurs first, but look at this. It's a beautiful thing. This is something that me and him have together, and nobody else understands. So when we only focus on all, fuck all, we got whipped. You can't remember all that good, all that fun that you had. So this week we're going to kind of go in a different direction, and I hope that everybody comes with us.
I thought that was beautiful. I really did.
Well, you guys could see me doing the air guitar and, you know, getting into it.
It brought a tear to my eyes, man. I love Spurs again.
Well, thank you. So, this week, our first segment is Spursily Unspursily. What we're going to do is recreate the Chelsea match with things that come from the Spursily side of football, which means that things have gone badly, or the Unspursily side of football, which means that things have gone well. We're going to be riffing a little bit off of each other, and to start us off, we have A1.
Okay, so I was actually there at the match myself, and my first recollection is that in the second minute, pretty early on really, Spursily, Hugo Lloris charged out to stop Hazard getting through on goal, and Dawson like pulled up his shorts in anger, and he ripped them. And that meant that Lloris actually got away with handballing outside of the area because the ref was distracted by Dawson's peen, which was very Spursily.
Unspursily, Michael Dawson then had an assist moments later, pants down.
Spursily, in the 15th minute, there was a large gasp let out from the crowd, but it wasn't because of anything that good that happened on the field. We all found out that we signed Luis Saha on a free.
Unspursily, in the 23rd minute, Soldado scored with a cracking long-range shot. With his weaker foot, he just kind of picked up the ball at about the halfway line, went on this crazy run, and then just picked out the top corner with this ridiculous shot.
Spursily, Paulinho received a second yellow and was sent off for delay of game when his pal Sandro was stretchered off and he ran over to give him a kiss.
Unspursily, in the 40th minute, Bentaleb nutmegged John Terry while backhanding him and threaded a through ball.
Spursily, the through ball was towards the wrong end of the field, and John Terry was up as a centre forward for Chelsea at that point. They were just kind of hoofing it long, and everyone was really confused, and Lloris just let it go in.
Unspursily, Vertonghen then smiled and encouraged his teammates to do better.
And we've come to halftime, knotted up at 1-1, Unspursily to Spursily.
Yeah, it was a pretty tough game that first half from what I guess we all remember. But you know, I mean, I felt like it had gone pretty well, and I was pretty confident actually, because you know Chelsea hadn't had that many chances. We'd had a lot of possession, yeah, you know, it was all definitely going to go really well.
Yeah, Unspursily, Tim Sherwood's halftime talk was about how much character the boys had and how they were going to overcome and. In the second half.
Spursily, though, we did have a couple of injuries at halftime, so we had to take off Lloris and bring on Friedel.
Unspursily, they were completely ready and warmed up and ready to go. The half got off to a slow start, but in the 51st minute, Spursily, Aaron Lennon made a great run down the center of the pitch and cut over to the right-hand side, only because he had to explain to Kyle Walker how to play right wing.
Unspursily, he then shot the ball in an appropriate manner and scored.
Hey!
Hey!
2-1. Good. Unspursily, in that kind of period of pressure that followed the goal, Sigurdsson hit the post with a long-range shot, and the ball cannoned out off John Terry, and then hit the post again, and then went out.
Unspursily, Sandro recovered the ball, kicked it out to the wing, and Kyle Naughton overlapped to send it across.
But obviously, Spursily, Soldado missed it. It was really easy, and he just fucked it up because he's got no confidence. And also, maybe he's not that good.
Unspursily, Sandro had returned from being stretchered off the field to perform the previous action.
Yeah, that was pretty unspursy. The scans looked good. He was like 90% fit, so they just sent him back out.
Spursily, in the 72nd minute, Harry Kane was thankfully substituted on, but unthankfully... Yes. Substituted as a central defender.
But unspursily, Harry Kane, playing as a central defender, then scored off a corner in the 76th minute.
Spursily, Sandro is now at 90% to play in the North London Derby.
Unspursily, Gylfi Sigurdsson made a wonderful touchline-hugging run down the flank and sent in a beautiful left-footed cross.
But Spursily, we were then... unfortunate. We conceded on the counter, possibly due to a lack of character, as the Chelsea goalkeeper just hoofed it really long. And Eto raced away from Harry Kane to slot round Friedel, who had just stayed on his line. So he just passed it really beyond him.
Unspursily, we had a free kick from a earlier foul where game of play was not stopped, and Michael Dawson threaded a beautiful cross-the-field ball up to Soldado, where it landed right at his feet.
But Spursley, and because he had been watching Roman Pavlyuchenko highlights, he sent the ball to row Z.
And that actually, I think, was the end of the match. In the end, I think we won.
3 for Unspursley, 2 for Spursley.
How many players do we have injured now?
We won. We won.
Fuck it. Fuck it. Yeah. We've got enough youth team. We can stock them all up and they will.
And a youth coach to help out.
Yeah. They'll definitely beat Arsenal. We'll be fine.
Well, for that rousing victory in the Spursy on Spursy match, nothing better to liven the crowd, to celebrate the mood, than a song. And for this week, we have a new segment called Secret Spurs Song Lyrics of the Week, where one of the members of the podcast lets us know about a song that we may or may not know about already, and explain to us how it's really about Spurs and not about what we used to think it was about. This week's member, we're going to have Bricks, and she is going to take it away with her song.
This week, we have really revamped the Chelsea game. We're all feeling pretty good, and what it really makes me think of is how much better it would be with AVB still as our manager, and just how all that went down over the holidays, specifically Christmas Vacation, and how that reminds me of the song Christmas Vacation by the Descendants. Now, the Descendants are icons in West Coast punk rock, as some of you may know, but what you don't know is that Milo and Bill are secretly massive yiddos, and wrote this song in anticipation of the Christmas Vacation that would ruin our lives. For example, just some of the lyrics about AVB and how his departure really affected us. You were depressed, you were really messed up. I know you understand, but why did you not talk to me? Why didn't you help me prepare for the nightmare? You took a vacation into oblivion. You were so low, and I felt like I didn't know you. Christmas Vacation, you took a vacation from me. I miss you, Andre.
That sounded a lot like what Andre would have said to Adebayor.
Oh,
you were really low, and you took a vacation, and you just disappeared. I mean, that literally happened. He disappeared. He was in Africa or something. He just never came back.
They also might have a song called Summer Vacation and Fall Vacation and Spring Vacation.
They sound great.
Creative juggernauts. Oh, hey guys, what should we name this one? Have we named one Summer Vacation yet?
No. Are you guys making fun of the Descendants?
I really don't know who they are.
Oh my god.
Speaking of Descendants, let's descend now into our next segment, A Lame of Two Halves, where we debate the hottest topics in football today. Today's contestants are Bricks and Cry, and they are locked into an epic, epic relegation scrap. Remember that A Lame of Two Halves is at its core about the preeminent issues in football today. It's all serious, folks. I know we have been, to this point, locked into silliness, but this is where we get serious. So today, after the Chelsea match, we are going to talk about, were Tim Sherwood's post-game comments helpful? Cry, you're up first. You're making out to the pitch in 3, 2.
Listen, guys. Our tactic, Tim, Sir Tim, was just telling like it is. Sometimes you just have to be into those Johnny Foreigners' heads that it doesn't matter how talented you are if you don't understand that grit and desire is what the supporters love about Tottenham. Doesn't matter how much talent you have, because all these English people don't have as much talent as Johnny Foreigner, but what those English people have is grit and desire. English want to play to the peanut gallery. The English Premier League, you play to the peanut gallery. You don't play to the scoreboard. All the English want to see is grit and desire, character, and hard work, because that's all they've had since 1966.
All right. Did a good job in bringing up, 1966, which we all know is an emotional, emotional time for most English people. You know, it brings up, it evokes memories, and it evokes a time where there was success in the national team. A1, what did you think about that argument?
Yeah, well, I obviously do remember 1966 well, and I was actually one of the people who ran onto the pitch. And I can distinctly remember, because I had my wireless radio plugged into my ear at that time, when the commentator said, they think it's all over. And I just ran, I just belted it straight on the pitch. I was like, you know what, it probably is over, isn't it? And he said, it is now. And I thought, well, yeah, that's good, because I'm on the pitch now. So, I mean, this would be illegal otherwise. So, yeah, that's basically my opinion.
All right. Well, it's going to be tough to come back from that. But we have Brix up next, and it looks like she's coming onto the pitch in 3, 2, 1.
Tim Sherwood was correct when he threw the team under the bus, because this team doesn't really do enough to support Eric Lamella. Eric Lamella has not made an appearance for Spurs in months because our players are assholes, and there's one asshole specifically. With people like Andrus Townsend on our squad controlling Tim Sherwood with his mindfuck games, our club will continue to lack serious characters as we let Andrus routinely injure Lamella in the physio room, hoping to make the bench as our team's worst winger. Townsend forced Sherwood to say the things about the squad that he didn't really mean, and proving that the selling and firing club is being ruined by Andrus Townsend and his father, Daniel Levy. Well, Levy, you sold the wrong winger, because Townsend is ruining this club. Put family aside and free Eric Lamella. Fire Andrus Townsend.
Time. All right. Well, I have to say that I certainly think Cry had some incision in the first half, and he certainly came away with a goal. But, you know, outing Andrus Townsend, the little-known fact that he's a gaping asshole was a huge move for Brix in this half. What do you think, A1?
Yeah, I've got to say, I'm listening to that, and I'm sort of putting myself in the mindset of your everyday fan, someone like Negative Shane, for example, and I'm just sort of thinking, I could not agree with that segment more than I have done. I couldn't agree with it more, because I do think that Townsend is terrible, and he's kind of a douche. And the way that he keeps injuring Lamella for no reason, it's just, it's pretty staggering, actually, when you think about it, because Lamella's really good, whereas Townsend, he's not very good. So, gotta say, that's a pretty strong argument. I feel like she scored a solid sort of 3 or 4 goals in that half.
I definitely thought she was prolific in the final third, and I'd like to say that the unveiling of Daniel Levy as Andrus Townsend's father was perhaps what sealed it and finally put the match to rest.
Yeah, that so, and also pronouncing Andrus as Andrus. I really enjoy that. Andrus.
So for a final score of this match, A1.
I'd have to call it 4-1.
4-1.
What?
4-1 to Brix.
Brixton walking away with it.
Yeah.
But English grit and desire! Yeah. 1966!
They didn't have enough. Didn't have enough grit.
Plus, most of us are American.
Yeah, they are mostly American.
Xenophobics. All of you.
You lose a lot on this show, Cry.
The English founded America.
Oh, wait.
We are half Americans.
Oh, okay. Which leaves the table, I think, at... it's going to be a draw, actually, between three of us at the top. Because now Brix has won one, Vin has won one, and I've won one. Cry is the only person who's played 2 games and has no points. So he's pretty terrible. Pretty terrible at the moment.
Where's Jesse Jackson when you need him?
I don't know who that is. So I don't know where they are either.
Well, even though I've been screwed over, I know who I know will support me, and that is you, the listeners. And with that, we're going to move into the mailbag section. Brix has been kind enough to collect some of our best and not-so-best questions and comments from our listeners, and now she's going to grace us with your opinions and questions and comments about this great podcast.
All right, so we're going to start off here with one of my personal favorite commenters, Gilfie, Viking Lord of the North. I'm gonna throw this question out to A1 first. A1, would you rather field a team of players with more grit, hardiness in them, much like a stew made out in the wilderness of some freshly picked veggies, and crafty beast you spent 2 days tracking, with a bit of dirt mixed in? Or would you rather field players with more creativity and control that could dance around inside the box performing elegant triple lutzes with the ball firmly attached to their feet as if, like David and his marble phallus, were both expertly sculpted from the same stone?
Firstly, I'd just like to thank Gilfy for taking, obviously, what was a great deal of time there in producing that question. And I'm assuming that we're only allowed basically either grit or... I'm going to choose to answer this question seriously. So I'm assuming that we're either only allowed grit or skill.
Yeah.
And I think that probably a team that has all skill and no grit is probably somebody like Spurs, who, you know, sometimes they look really nice and they just kind of get butchered by teams like Stoke sometimes. Whereas a team that has all grit and no skill basically is Stoke, and certainly old Stoke. And consequently, I really would choose, if I only had the one, I would choose skill. But I think that, you know, obviously grit only takes you so far, but skill also does only take you so far. And I honestly think you have to have a little bit of both. You have to have the skill, then you have to have some sort of determination and character. And I think actually that we do have both, particularly in Eriksen and Ade in that match against Dnipro, really digging deep and getting it together. And I thought actually we probably do have both. But if I had to choose, I would choose skill.
I'm going to follow up here and disagree. I'd rather have the grit. I like dirt. I like garden. I like the woods. I'm a hippie. And I think that I get that a little bit more. I love people who can, you know, like you said about Stoke, their work rate is incredible. And the old Stoke under TP there was definitely a Stoke that I actually found exciting to watch just because of how hard they worked. Now, I definitely wouldn't want an entire team made up of Stoke in the past 2 or 3 years, but I'd rather have somebody like a Michael Dawson who definitely has everybody else's best interest at heart, isn't our best skilled player. I'd rather have him there than somebody who's just there to basically dance through it and make it look effortless. That's not somebody that I associate with but relate to in real life. So I got to go with the gritty and the dirty.
So if I can wrap that in a bow, you both would rather have Michael Dawson than Sol Campbell.
That's correct.
I got no problem with Sol Campbell.
Ah!
Next question. This is from my girl, Loretta. I'm going to give this one to Cry and 55th. Loretta wants to know, we'll go to you first, Cry, but is Sherwood going to be axed before the end of the season? And who, if so, who would you have replace him?
Lord only knows. He deserves to be axed. He deserves to be axed for trying to be an offensive coordinator in British soccer. But unfortunately, due to financial situations and the pictures he has of Daniel Levy at Christmas party, he will not be axed, and he will stay on until the World Cup is over.
55th, really?
All right, well, I didn't want him axed, but now I've been thinking about this, and I want him to be fired, and I want us to hire Ledley King to be our manager so that when the team doesn't try very hard or fucks up, you can just there go, really, huh, okay, I played for this club with one fucking leg and that's what you did, okay. I just want it to be just full on spite to the players. So I want us to axe him and hire Ledley King and his one glorious knee.
Next question, it's probably at my expense. This is from someone named Benoit's Smart Car.
Did you say Benoit's Dumb Car?
Yeah, Benoit's Dumb Car.
Oh, okay. Benoit had anything smart in his life.
You know what? Vin is going to jump through this pod and harm you. So the question is make the perfect footballer using body parts from other Spurs players.
Oh, Jesus Christ. He's got a knife.
It's what? Super got a fucking knife. Brutal.
Guys, okay, guys, we can see each other while we're recording this. And he's just, Vin just got out a knife and started playing with it in preparation for answering this question. That is terrifying. He's got a massive knife.
Vin, on that note, since you're preparing dinner, would you like to take this question first?
Certainly. I think hair, we have to go with, you know, not only how it looks now, but potential. So hair, we have to go with Eric Lamella because, you know, it's pretty. It's well-coiffed. But like I said, you know, he hasn't shown us all he's got yet. So I'm going Eric Lamella with hair.
So Vin just described a player that only has hair and no other body parts.
And then face, I think we're going to go with Michael Dawson. We're going to go with Michael Dawson because we know that, you know, his English bravery, you know, sometimes leads him to put his face in front of crosses. And we know it's durable. I don't really know how durable anybody else's face is. Body? I don't know, but I would have to say here that we're going to probably go with Yunus Kabul, you know, the bull in the channel shop. He's probably the strongest. So far we have the hair of Lamella, the face of Dawson, and the body of Yunus Kabul. For thighs, I am going to go Aaron Lennon. Hmm. You know, thighs and legs, I'm going to go Aaron Lennon because we want this big beast to be extraordinarily quick and frightening to the opponents. And then for feet, just because we want, you know, these feet to be Spursily, if we will, we're going to give it Roberto Soldado's feet so he can plant the ball into Rosie.
Okay, this player's missing hands. Does anybody have anybody they'd like to add their hands?
Me.
Oh.
Left hand has to be Jake Livermore's. Right hand has to be Kyle Walker, so we can give themselves the best dap in the world.
Oh, that is a pretty sweet handshake they have.
What's a dap?
I don't know.
That handshake that they did, you can find the Vine of it. They do a quick little funny handshake.
Oh, yeah, no, I've seen that.
It's called dap. That's a dap. That's dapping each other. That's one way to dap.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, the dap, right.
I'm gonna follow up. It's pretty clear that 55th and I look for different things in men. So I'm going to start from the bottom up here, and this person is going to have Dawson's calves and knees, because the socks always seem to stay on Dawson's legs, and it's really annoying to have to keep pulling your socks up all the time, and he has really well-photographed knees. So Dawes on the calves and knees. Moving up, Dembele on the thighs. I don't think I need to explain that at all. The hardest one for me is the backside, but I'm going to have to go with Aaron Lennon on that for sure. For torso and body, I'm really torn on this one, but I think I'm going to play a wild card, and I'm going to go with Kyle Naughton for the torso and upper body because he's not too muscly. I know Vin likes the cool kind of approach. I like skinny guys, so I'm going to stick with Naughton on this.
I like a man.
I like a skinny man. And then for shoulders and neck and face, we're going with Gylfi Sigurdsson. I don't think I have to preface that as I am his biggest fan in the world, but absolutely sticking with that. And I'm going to go with Aaron Lennon's arms because the movement is fantastic. Little jazz hands, little penguin. And for hair, I'm definitely going to pick the current best hair on the squad, and it's only going to get better. And that is one Christian Eriksen.
By better, you mean bald.
Hey, it works. We're going to go through these last two questions pretty quickly. So this question comes in from Prometheus. If Michael Dawson was a bad alternative rock band from the 90s, which band would he be? I'm going to have Cry and A1 answer this one. A1, why don't you go first?
Okay, thanks very much, Bricks. And to Prometheus, I think that Michael Dawson is quite similar to Radiohead's first album, Pablo Honey, which is when Radiohead started out as a kind of shit alternative rock band, and then eventually they have grown into a much better band that don't really just do alternative rock. They do all kinds of excellent and kind of weird music. So bearing that in mind, I think that actually if we just read down the track list for Pablo Honey, it says, "You creep. How do you stop whispering? Thinking about you, anyone can play. Guitar. Ripcord. Vegetable. Prove yourself. I can't. Lurgy. Blowout." And I think that pretty well describes how Dawson approaches life and football. So that would be my answer.
That's going to be hard to follow. Cry.
Hard to follow if
he quit the podcast again.
You rage quit again, yeah.
Vin, you want to take this one? You got any ideas of who you would compare Dawes to as a 90s horrible alternative rock band?
Yeah, I think on the fly here, I'm going to compare Dawes to Candlebox because they had that famous song, Far Behind, which is usually where Dawes is in defense when he plays a top-notch striker. So I am going to say that Dawes is, he's Candlebox. Because you, Sergio Aguero, have left me far behind.
But man.
Just to be clear as well, we were kind of led by Prometheus's question there to make it terrible. And I do like Michael Dawson. He's a terrific player, and I'm very, very glad that he's out of it.
Yeah, we should just clarify that. This is a pro-Michael Dawson podcast. We like Michael Dawson. Michael Dawson is God. He shares the role with Tom Carroll from time to time. So that's just where we stand here in the correct podcast.
I'd also like to say that I got lumped in with a lot of things that are said on this podcast. And I, for one, would like to say that I like Michael Dawson. But I think we could do a little bit better from time to time.
Stop talking about his penis. Stop constantly talking about Michael Dawson's penis, just like you were just before we started recording live.
And again, we enter a third podcast talking about penises.
Only a little bit.
Only a little bit.
Just a tip.
And that concludes the Q&A.
I'm going to bring this back onto track, onto Spurs, with my newest installment of Cry's Cross-Culture Clash, where I talk about a little bit of America, a little bit of England, mix it all up. In this installment, over the weekend, I found this article, this petition actually, of entitled "Without Fans, There Is No Football." A few of my favorite quotes from the article were this: "Government action is needed. UK football clubs are not financial franchises. They are rooted in local community and are an important part of local identity and heritage. But a new type of club owner is disregarding all this, pricing many people out of the game with inflated tickets and other costs, alienating people by seeking to change club names, colors, and so on. An example that they use is Coventry City, whose owner has relocated the club from the city of Coventry to Northampton, 35 miles away." Now, this got me thinking. Something about this is not right to me as an American, and because the way I see it is, I see English clubs, used to at least, as franchises by the American standard. However, they're much more than that. To the English people, the clubs like Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, Manchester United, so on and so forth, are like, to us Americans, Texas football teams. And if you took a high school from this great state of Texas, well, not great state of Texas, but an okay state, and moved the high school to a different district, there would be a massive uproar. And I think that's how the English fans are treating whenever somebody wants to change something in England with their clubs like Hull City Tigers or the Cardiff City Bluebirds, who are red. That wouldn't fly in an American high school, and that shouldn't fly in English clubs. And that concludes Cry's cross-culture rant.
Wow. Well, I guess as an Englishman, I've got to say it does Cry kind of sent around that the link to this protest petition, and I really thought that it's kind of sad. I do remember, God, I hope I'm remembering the right Coventry anyway, but I'm pretty sure that Darren Huckabee used to play for Coventry, and if I am correctly remembering, Darren. Yes, he did. He did. I've just looked it up. He did play for Coventry, and he had a good partnership with Dion Dublin. I absolutely do remember this. Okay. And no, they were really exciting. And I'm sad that it seems like Coventry are apparently being relocated to Northampton. I wish them the best of luck with fighting that. And also, I think, you know, all joking aside, what's happening at Cardiff is disgraceful. It's obviously the case that the money that's come in is saving them from basically like extinction. But I just wonder whether, you know, if you've got a problem with your club, whether just injecting a whole bunch of money into it and hoping that it sorts itself out is the right way. And I wonder if Spurs were suddenly, which they won't, but if they were to suddenly, you know, encounter really serious financial difficulties, like maybe if we bought Bale back for £300 million, then I wonder what I would want us to do. And maybe the kind of path of going into administration, or, you know, the legit way, basically, of you keep your club, you just have really fucked it up. Maybe that's actually better than what Cardiff are going through at the moment.
I have a question for you, A1. Since you're over there in England, how come when, like, these owners, when the fans have problems, like the owners, how come they don't, like, I guess, boycott and like protest and by using finances rather than just like going on their hashtag brigades or like chanting silly songs? Like, why not just like not show up to the game or not buy a kit or something that like actually affects the owner's like bottom line? Because in America, like, affecting a person's bottom line and money is a much more effective way of protest, from my understanding. So,
absolutely, and I think that is the case in England, and that actually I would imagine that with Cardiff, a lot of the fans that you're seeing in the stadium this year are not the fans that have been following Cardiff for the last few years, because I imagine that a good number of them have said, well, this just isn't my club anymore. It's ridiculous. They've changed, you know, better dead than red. And, you know, I mean, to some extent, we kind of mock, you know, the more extreme side of rejecting money, and I feel like sometimes we're a little disingenuous on Cartilage Free about things like the Against Modern Football campaign. But actually, there are real lives being affected by it. And if someone took the club that I had grown up with, so in my case Tottenham, and just gutted it, changed us to play in a completely different kit, changed our name to like the Tottenham Powerade, and I mean, like, moved us to Stoke, then fuck those guys. Because I've still got that emotional connection to Spurs. I can't kill that suddenly overnight. But they've just gutted the team. It's not the same team that they supported. I don't know what I would do in that position, whether I'd stop supporting
the team. Would you be able to, like, support a different team, like a Leighton Orient or something like that?
I really don't know, because I don't have any connection with that team. I would just, you know, I mean, I'm sure it would save me a lot of money, but... You know, the players that I've grown up with, Lennon and, I mean, just, sorry, I'm not just stopping at Lennon, but literally everyone. I guess it's difficult, actually, because we've sold a lot of those players. I honestly don't know what I would do. And I feel like, I just feel really bad for Cardiff, basically. I feel really terrible for Cardiff. To answer your question, I think that people do boycott them, but they're replaced, because football is such a popular sport, they're replaced by a whole bunch of completely different fans who will just pay money because they don't know any better.
So is that what, like, the whole anti-StubHub thing is about? It's more like the average fan doesn't feel like they are actually, like, getting better access to the stadium to watch Tottenham play, or?
I think that's definitely a part of it, because you know that the tickets are going to sell. I don't think that's in question. Okay. It's the national sport of the country. It is a huge deal. I don't know whether there are equivalents in America, but certainly it's the case that... when I was at school, not that long ago, when England were playing Brazil, we were right in the middle of, like, preparation for some pretty important exams. But we pretty much had, like, almost a whole school... The whole school, basically, was just, like, congregating near any TVs they could find, and we were watching the matches. But there's always going to be demand. But the key is that you cannot be irresponsible with your pricing, because it's... A, it is the national sport. It's one of the protected... like a protected area of art or culture in this country, which is why it's still, crucially, it's got to be shown on terrestrial free television or TV licensed television. And if you price out average, ordinary, everyday people, that is a failure of this country, and it's protected in law. So that's, I think, why it's so important.
All right. Well, we've been really serious for a little bit too long, longer than usual on this podcast, so we're just going to have to move this right along. Let's do a little MASH preview. Later this week, we have a Europa League game away to Benfica. Anybody got anything to say?
Go ahead, Brick.
I love Europa. To me, it is literally it's where I'm putting all my hope in the rest of the season. I'm not concerned. From what I understand, if we finish fifth or sixth, we qualify for Europa this year. Is that correct? You might want to back me up on that. It's fifth and sixth place in the Premier League. Does that go to Europa?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. It would depend on who wins what.
I think we could
let's get out of Europa.
It's probably fifth.
Okay, I think we'll hopefully still make it. I love Europa. I've mentioned before on the pod that I prefer Europa to Champions League because I don't like what Champions League does to the league, to the Premier League. So I'm really, really, really excited. These midweek games, honestly, these Europe games are just keeping me all positive this year. This is all I care about for the rest of the season. So I'm stoked. Cautiously excited because it is Tottenham.
That's fun. That's cool. Let's get to what everybody cares about. The Woolwich Wanderers. We got them Sunday. Arsenal. Spurs. The North London Derby.
That was a shit accent.
What the hell was that?
Arsenal. Talking.
Wow.
The North London Derby.
Yeah. Mate.
Warren Barton. Nobody? 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 All right. Whatever. Well, that doesn't discount the fact that we have Arsenal this weekend. So, who wants to talk about them? Ozil got hurt today.
Who wants to talk about where your accents are coming from? Jesus Christ.
Accent.
You said Arsenal like you're from Boston, and then you were talking like a pirate
Arsenal.
30 seconds before.
Oh my God, is that actually how you say Arsenal? Say it again.
Arsenal.
What the hell? That's not your accent. That's really weird.
Making shit
say
up
passport.
As he goes along.
Passport.
Yeah, now say Arsenal.
Arsenal.
For fuck's sake.
It's really weird. Oh, well.
Anybody have anything to say about Arsenal?
Well.
Something have constructive to say about Arsenal?
No, not me.
No, I got nothing.
Go ahead, A1.
Okay. No, I was just going to say, so I think it's, we know now that Kabul, his suspension has been revoked. He was wrongly sent off. You were wrong, you stupid referee. You were wrong. It wasn't a red card, and you fucked up that whole game. Anyway, yeah. So we know that Kabul. No, we weren't going to lose. We were going to win. Kabul is back, and that's really good because Dawson is probably out. So and Vertonghen's all right. So we should have Vertonghen and Kabul. So and also Arsenal don't have Ozil. And actually, I don't know if that makes them weaker or stronger. I asked that on Cartridge Free because he seems to be kind of shit. I don't know if that's an impression that anyone else has got.
No, I don't think he's played well recently. I've limitedly seen him. I don't watch Arsenal if I don't have to. I have no interest in seeing them do anything. Mm. But what I've noticed is that, you know, it seems like he just hasn't been, I don't know, gelling with the team from what people say, just really not contributing. But, you know, they still have Walcott and Wilshire out. Is Aaron Ramsey still injured? Aaron Ramsey? How do you say that?
I'd probably say
Jesus Aaron. Will heal himself.
The Welsh Jesus will heal himself. I mean, who else is out for them? They always have this problem with injuries, and not to say that we're immune from it, but I'm not shocked by three of their star players being out by any means.
Yeah, I think probably three of their least shit players are out, but they're still pretty shit. We don't know actually how many.
Doesn't
are.
Matter.
I want to clarify.
Doesn't matter. He's going to score a hat trick this game.
I used air quotes around the word star,
yeah.
Just to clarify. Everybody. Yeah.
No, but seriously, I think we've got a very good chance against Arsenal, considering that they've had a much better season than us, and probably realistically this season, they're a worse team, and considering that, we should be able to beat them pretty easily, especially while they don't have Ozil, and we do have Kabul, and maybe we'll have Eriksen, I don't really know, but we're probably not going to play with any of our players in sensible positions, because I don't know what the fuck is going on with this team anymore, but fingers crossed. I think if we assume that we're going to get no points, then we should be able to get more than no points, and that'll be a nice surprise.
I think Townsend's going to score a hat-trick, and Soldado is going to have a goal line clearance to make himself a hero. That's my prediction for the match. And I also think Arsenal is going to get relegated soon.
Which brings us to a new series. Your team is getting relegated. In a series stolen from Deadspin's Drew Magri by Lennon's Eyebrow, and then stolen from him by Skipjack, from whom I have now stolen it, we add to the legacy of larceny, explain why Tottenham Hotspur's next opponent blows. So while perhaps not fucking off to Woolwich, which all of us dream of, it's a different kind of relocation. To the Championship. Congratulations, Arsenal Fuckball Club. You suck, and your team is getting relegated. Reason number one, your club sucks. In fact, everyone is so desperate for trophies that the board has approached Olivier Giroud about putting pictures of his extramarital conquests in the cabinet. Oh, and have you seen Stan Kroenke's mustache? It's so terrible it makes Ron Jeremy seem comely. There's also that little-known club motto that never caught on. Wandering for 100 years. Rumor next stop on Woolwich's UK tour, Milton Keynes. The second reason you suck is that your fans suck. Your stadium atmosphere brings up the age-old question. If the tree falls in the forest but nobody hears or sees it, has it happened? I know there are people in the Emirates, but I'm pretty sure it's just one big bejeweled blitz tournament. Honestly, they would rather get your wretched band of nomads trending on Twitter than sing an actual song. And lastly, Piers Morgan. Number three, your manager sucks. Is a man consistently baffled by zippers really the one to lead you to a new era of shitty 1-0 victories? Not to mention that he is consistently voted worst member of the neighborhood watch, refusal to see incidents and all. Which brings us to the fourth point. Your players suck. Santi Cazorla sucks, but I hate to kick a man when he's down. So get up, Santi, you wretched cheat, so I can berate your diving ass. Lukas Podolski is also perfect for the Arsenal. He understands selling out his roots. Poland's Judas. Thomas Rosicki looks like Jared Leto and Fun Bobby from Friends Love Child. Oh, and you know that bag of dicks, Jack Wheelchair? He's more interested in being the new Marlboro man than being healthy for two consecutive weeks. Mesut Ozil might be more disinterested in what's going on with the club than the fans, which is some kind of impressive. He has to be reaching some kind of absolute zero of fucks given. So in my closing thoughts, I'd like to wish you well on your derbies with Millwall and Watford next year, Gooners. You're terrible, and you're getting relegated.
Woo! They do suck.
Yes, yes. Woolwich does suck. Well, thank you guys for listening. This has been another edition of Mass Head Free Podcast. Before we go, I'd like to end this with a prayer for our Europa League tie and our derby match against the Arsenal with this prayer. So if you can all bow your heads with me. Dear Ibra, who art in Paris for now, okay. Hallowed be thy name, thy Champions League glory come. Thy will be done at White Hart Lane as it is in Sweden. Give us Premier League titles our unleavened bread, and forgive us our dives as we forgive the soulless Woolwich Wanderers for that have trespassed against us. And lead us not into Madrid partnership temptations, but deliver us from Europa League, for thine is the heather, the right and left boot, and the glory forever and ever. Zlatan.
Wow. Dieter Zlatan. Dieter Zlatan.
Fuck you, bro. That concludes Masthead Free Podcast, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It's a good thing this week that we weren't incredibly terrible. thanks, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
If you're still listening.
If you're still listening.